after leaving behind his nets and answering the call to follow Jesus. Peter, also known as Simon Peter, transformed from an ordinary Jewish fisherman into the rock on which Jesus built the church. Peter is one of the most well-known biblical figures in the history of the world. St. Peter's Basilica in Rome is the largest church in the world, and it was built on the site where Peter was martyred alongside Paul by Emperor Nero after 34 years of ministry. The historian Jerome tells us that Peter was crucified upside down at his request, as he didn't consider himself worthy to die in the same way that Jesus did. While revered after his death, our scriptures paint a complicated picture of Peter. He is described as a disciple with a wandering heart. Peter's journey of following Jesus was filled with ups and downs, ebbs and flows, faithfulness and disobedience. Peter was the first person called by Jesus, the first one who was made a fisher of people. And every time the disciples are listed, Peter comes first. He's the first to profess faith in Jesus, always the first one to answer Jesus' questions, even when he probably should have maybe kept his mouth shut, and the first one to witness Jesus' resurrection. Peter preaches the first sermon at Pentecost. He's the first apostle to perform a miracle healing a crippled beggar. He's the first one to extend the mission of Christ to the Gentiles and to receive them into community. However, Peter is also the one who, after confessing that Jesus is God's son, refuses to accept that Jesus has to suffer. Though Jesus declares Peter the rock of the church, he also calls him a stumbling block. Peter is brave enough to step out onto the water to walk toward Jesus, but then sinks in fear. Peter goes with Jesus to the mountaintop and watches him be transfigured, offering to erect tents, but then can't stay awake when Jesus asks him to pray in Gethsemane. Peter says he will give up his life for Jesus, but then when asked if he knows the guy on the night of his crucifixion, he denies Jesus, not once or twice, but three times. Peter's passionate commitment to Jesus is matched only by his fearful and short-sighted failures. Peter was prone to wonder, that's for sure. But even though Peter had a wandering heart, Jesus sought him again and again. Peter's journey as Jesus' disciple officially begins in our passage today. And though Peter had met Jesus before, you have to remember that Peter and Jesus were friends. Jesus spent time in Peter's home. And one day when Jesus arrived at Peter's home after leaving the synagogue, Jesus found Peter's mother-in-law suffering with a high fever. Jesus healed her and demonstrated who he was to Peter and everyone who was gathered in Peter's home that day. And now Peter welcomes Jesus into his boat so that he can teach and preach to the crowds gathered around the shore. After he finishes, he tells Peter to go to the deeper water and put out his nets again. And Peter's a bit baffled as he tells Jesus that they've been fishing all night and they haven't caught anything. But he says, okay, Jesus, I'll do what you tell me to. And when Peter tries to bring his nets up this time, they are so full that they're bursting. They have to call for help from the other boats, and there's so many fish, it starts to cause them all to sink. Where there was scarcity, there is now overwhelming abundance. And Jesus says to them, do not be afraid. From now on, you will fish for people. Jesus tells people not to be afraid a lot. But this instance of him saying it is a bit confusing to me. Why? are they so afraid? Shouldn't they be ecstatic? These fishermen who are making their living off of catching fish now have quite a bit of fish to sell. They're about to be raking in the profits, aren't they? Rolling in the dough or the fish scales, I suppose. But no, they weren't. Because they were embedded in an exploitative fishing economy. While many people made a lot of money off of fishing, the average Galilean fisherman struggled to survive. The fish industry was booming because of the popularity of a condiment called garum, which was made from fermented fish guts that were ground and seasoned with salt. Don't you want some, Stephen? I've been trying to find it. It was commonly used in recipes in order to enhance the flavor. And it was so essential in Rome that trade routes were developed in order to distribute it. Galilee was an important stop in the route. Those above the actual fishermen, the ones who organized the fishing families and the day laborers, the distributors, the processors, the shippers, the tax collectors, and the emperors themselves took more than their fair share of profits off of this industry. Herod Antipas himself made 1.2 million denarii off of the sales. Peter might be afraid that the Roman government will be suspicious of how he acquired all of these fish. He was certainly concerned about the amount of taxes and fees he would have to pay at one time on this large haul. Even still, there would have been more profit to be made for him than ever before, but as he is staring at his largest catch ever, Jesus calls him to walk away from it all. And he does. He knows that though there may be a little more money in this one catch, it all comes up empty eventually for people like him. Peter walks away from the exploitative work of the fishing industry to join Jesus in declaring there is abundant life, especially for people like him who have been overworked and underpaid and abused. Peter walks away so that he can share the reality that there is actually life and abundance available for all of God's children. Notice Peter's first response, though, is to hesitate. He says, "Go away from me, Lord. I am a sinful man." He's in awe, and he can't believe it to be true. He can't believe that he could be delivered from the struggle of trying to forge a life in an economy where he can never really get ahead. He can't believe the tables might be turning toward abundance. Peter, even at the beginning, is prone to wander away from it all. But Jesus seeks him. Jesus stays after him. Jesus tells him to not be afraid. Jesus tells him that he will fish for people, or as it says in the Greek, catch people alive. Peter will be able to proclaim life and not death over God's beloved children. On this first Sunday of Lent, you are invited to journey these 40 days with Peter, to learn from his failures and his steadfastness, to learn from one whose heart is prone to wonder. You're invited to search and to yearn with him as we figure out how to bind our own wandering hearts to God. Like Peter, our faith journeys are not linear. There are ups and downs, seasons of peace and seasons of disorientation. There are times we fail and times when our faith steadies us and helps us cling to life and abundance. Theologian Stephen J. Benz writes, "Peter never tries to minimize, justify, or rationalize his own mistakes, but he honestly confesses his sins and failings. Although he often fails to live up to his calling, because of his humility and repentance, he learns and grows in discipleship through his failures. That's what I admire about him. I too find my life to be a mass of contradictions. and often I try to justify my failures, to play down my blunders. Peter's own merit and accomplishments do not create his heroic character. Rather, Peter is defined in Christian history by what the love of Jesus wrought in him. Peter challenges us to confront the truth of our own brokenness so that God's grace can fashion us into the disciples Jesus calls us to be. This Lent, we're invited to let the love of God wrestle us into the disciples Jesus calls us to be. We are to remember that though we are prone to wander, though we are a mass of contradictions, Jesus keeps seeking us. When Jesus calls us, we are not to be afraid to leave behind the things that might be comfortable or familiar, but ultimately bring death. We are to drop our nets and follow Jesus into abundant life. When Peter drops his nets and follows Jesus, Jesus becomes his trusted companion, a friend who will hold him close and walk with him. Peter, too, is tethered to Jesus and journeys with him as Jesus journeys towards the cross. And though Peter really misses the mark over and over again, Jesus continues to seek him, to call him back, to show him what the gospel is really all about. Peter has a friendship with Jesus that totally reshapes his life. Theologian Diana Butler Bass writes, "The story of the New Testament is that the risk of friendship is the risk that frees us from fear and reshapes our lives. It is better to go together than to go alone." Jesus befriends us, opening our hearts to genuine love and the capacity to forgive each other, welcome all, and act justly in the world. Friendship with God and with the community of God's people is a risk, but it can change us. As I turned 40 earlier this month, yes, it's real, I know some of you know about it, I had the privilege of being surrounded by my closest friends. And for a few magical days, they celebrated me and loved on me, and it was an experience that I won't soon forget. The week culminated in a party for Adam and me as he turns 40 next month. Sorry, Adam. And we were blessed to have friends come from near and far, from our neighborhood, and from all over North and South Carolina. And as I soaked it all in, I felt grateful to have friends surrounding me who have known me since I was an obnoxious goody-two-shoes in elementary school, friends who witnessed me on a middle school dance floor, friends who watched me turn my valedictorian speech at my private high school into a sermon. Yes, Friends who bore with me as I navigated a crisis of faith in college. Our matron of honor and our best man at our wedding were there, the two people who held us up and navigated the pain of my parents' divorce at our wedding. And as I looked around, I saw the people who had helped me to claim my calling as a preacher, the people who helped me to find a church, this church, where I am blessed to be able to fully be who I am and follow in the direction that God calls me to go. I saw friends who helped me welcome my babies into this world, friends who love them like their family. I gave thanks for friends who've weathered this life for me, helping me to pick myself up when my whole world has fallen apart. Friends who can bear the truth no matter how painful it is. Friends who can gently point out where I've gone wrong and hold my hand as I try to do better. Friends who've helped me find my integrity again when I am a mass of contradictions. As I've wandered on my journey, they have sought me, loved me, and reminded me that God has not abandoned me. My friends have reminded me that I am beloved by them and by God. My friends have reshaped me, and they have helped to free me from fear and open me up to genuine love. Often children make friends easily. They don't put up the same barriers as adults. They know how to be friends with people who aren't just like them. Sometimes adults think they don't have time for friends, or that friends are optional and not as critical as the other important things in their life. Often we find friends through our own children or our jobs, or because we're working side by side for a common cause. But I'm not sure friendships are optional. I think they might be essential. Friendships can help us to find our way as we wander. They can help us to find our way back to faithfulness. They can help us find our way back to God. While we would show up and do anything for our closest friends, it's not even just about us. It's about the whole world. It's about the beloved community that God is creating. As Diana Butler Bass says, instead of just rejoicing in the private relations between friends, we who follow Jesus turn outwards and invite others to come along. We do not just please ourselves or work to serve others. We invite them to the table to sit and enjoy the companionship of all. We give up false notions of friendship, notions of exclusivity and preference, and instead set a table where everyone is welcome, where strangers become friends, and where every person is an honored guest. As we seek after each other, holding one another up as we wander, we remember that Jesus is our friend who is seeking us too. And Bass says, Jesus as friend does not offer a plan. Instead, he extends a hand that guides us into a new reality. Here, friendship itself is the embodiment of a more just and loving world. Jesus seeks us when we are acting like strangers, tethers us back to ourselves, to one another, and to God, and in us and through us births a more just and loving world. As we begin this Lent together, I invite you to remember that no matter how far you wander or how many times you miss the mark, God is chasing after you. God will keep crawling in your boat again and again. You are not alone. Do not be afraid. Whatever it is that you need to leave behind, leave it. There is abundant life ahead, beloved, for you, for me, for all of God's children. Amen.